Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Sue Fraser. On behalf of my colleagues at the Press Club, the news directors and the editors of the various media outlets, I'd like to acknowledge Telstra as a corporate supporter of Adelaide's Premier Lunch Forum. Would you thank them, please? And I welcome Telstra representatives today. Also, our appreciation to Qantas for supporting the Press Club with airfares, and thank you to SA Brewing. Today, of course, you can enjoy Southwark Black Ale and Harm Premium Light. Thank you, Robbie. And yes, please do. And if you'd like to receive notification of these lunches, just let us know. Speak to Merle out there at the front desk and she'll put your name on the mailing list. The Press Club, of course, as you know, is non-profit. And our raffle pays for the incidentals, so the tickets are $2, or a bargain, 3 for $5. And let me tell you what we have for you to win today. Now, we put committee member Rex Jory under pressure. We said, come up with a raffle prize, Rex. And he did. Thanks to Lacoon, who's here, we have this wonderful little compact, durable leather recliner chair and matching footstool, valued at $329. Good one, Rex. So you can curl up in front of the TV and fall asleep in that one. It's made worldwide furniture company Chairworks, and we thank LaCornu for that. Thank you, Rex, too. Also, we have 12-month connection to Telstra Message Bank at Home, valued at $60, plus a Telstra gold pen and pencil set, 3 bottles of wine twice, and a carton of Harm Premium Light from SA Brewing. So put your $2 in the envelope and 3 tickets for $5. Now, as a courtesy to our guest speaker, would you please ensure that your mobile phone is turned off right now? And please welcome back the President of the South Australian Press Club, Don Riddell.
Thank you, sir. What is it about Victorians that makes us love them so? They're our nearest neighbours, they treat us gently and with respect, they never say a nasty word about us, they never steal our car races, they even at times play the same sort of football as we do. Perhaps today we may find out. Our guest today is all the things we love about Victoria. He could certainly play football, more than 300 with the Geelong Football Club, for Victoria of course, and his white boots earned him a selection as an All-Australian. In latter years, he has taken football humour from the wide-eyed incredulousness of Lou Richards closer to the wonderfully dangerousness of Barry Humphreys, a unique and occasionally unstoppable talent. But today he may be in a benign mood. The dreaded Crows have been walloped in the last 2 matches. Please welcome John Sammy Newman.
You idiot, Don. Now, why do I get the feeling I'm in a hostile room? Why do I give a stuff? And I can see most of you sitting out there thinking I'm a prick. And no, I know that. And you'd probably be right. And I know it's a non-profit organisation, Sue. So I flew over economy. You must have actually thought I was a journalist, did you? Or still, we put that behind us. And it's very nice to be here anyhow. Now, I thought I could chat about the things that you would know a little about, the trade-weighted index maybe, or a basket of currencies, if anyone knows what that means, or the International Wheat Agreement. But why dabble in things that you know nothing about? So I'll get on to speaking crap, which is what I normally speak. Now, give a little background on me, and then I'll make some observations about you. This is the media. Now, I don't know if you've ever had a rough 18 months in your life, but 18 months ago I had a rough 18 months. I was sitting down the front of my house with a woman. I'll be honest, I'm still the only heterosexual in my street as I speak. I live in Brighton, which is a very, very salubrious suburb just out of the central business district in Melbourne, and as I understand it, I am the only heterosexual in the street. And as a result of that, I had a woman in the front of my house. I'd been out to dinner with her, and I'd spoken to her a bit about life and attitudes and perceptions, and I'd got her down the front of my house and had most of her clothes off. And what is life about? So we dispensed with all the crap and the small talk, and we got down to the heavy necking and petting. And there was a knock on the door, and she said, "Don't answer it." And I said, "Well, now, how silly would that be? Why wouldn't you answer a knock on your door? Who would it be?" Because I'd been out with her for 3 or 4 hours at Chinese food we'd had, and she hadn't told me that she was with anyone or had been with anyone for a while. And so as I sort of got most of my clothes on and got to the front door and opened it, this bloke said, "Was Melissa in?" And I said, "Yes, would you like to?" And I was about to say, "Would you like to speak to her?" And he knocked me out through the flywire screen, which was a security screen, incidentally. So as I lay there with a broken nose and the bloke actually trying to bite my breast off and de-knacker me, I made a mental note to actually ring the security people up and say, "What a piece of shit are you selling on the market?" So I recovered from that. Took a while, I'll be honest. It took a while to recover, and had a bit of surgery done to the nose. And so I just was getting back on my feet, literally, and I was going out with this girl. 7 years I'd been going out with her, and I was driving home from dinner, and we'd had an argument, just a small discussion about, I'm not sure what, maybe, can't remember, but I said, "Look, why don't you go home to your sort of accommodation, and I'll stay here," and this didn't go down too well with her, and here is where I made the second fatal mistake of my life, perhaps just in as many weeks. I walked around the back of a car as she threw it into reverse and quickly backed over the top of me. And I remember thinking, Jesus, if I actually walked around the other side, I would have been on the median strip and she wouldn't have been able to get me. But no, so I lay there, the bit of, I think, GDX multigrade just dripping onto the shirt as I looked up at the sump of the Daewoo. And I thought, well, I tell you what, you can have a rough trot, because I don't know if you've ever been run over by anyone, let alone a loved one. But if you haven't, could I suggest, in the solace of your own house, get your missus to back over you in your own driveway and just see how you handle it. It's it can give you the loyalty test. They'll give you the tip. So I was taken to hospital and had 8 or 9 pins put in my leg and had my arm fixed and another bout of surgery to my face. So I thought, how bad can it get? But of course September rolled around and the Crows won the flag. Hey? Which one, the first time or the second time, sir? That was both, was it? Yeah. So, you know, I suppose in the face of adversity, people like to step to the line, unlike most of the media who never step to the line in doing anything because they never put themselves in the position to step to the line. They just sit there and carp and take things out of context. But I'll get on to that. So, I thought, well, what if I wasn't a football commentator, for want of a better word, would I actually be doing in life? And the answer is, fuck all, I'd be doing nothing. I have not qualified to do anything. And you might wonder how people like myself get jobs in the media. Because I'm not scholastically inclined. And if you just have a look at most of the people who write and talk about sport in the papers, on the radio and on the television, you'll quickly understand that none of them are either. I watched a game on Channel 7. Well, of course, you've got to watch it on Channel 7 because they are the carrier. Up in Brisbane, it was Brisbane and Collingwood. And John Platten was doing the special comments. Robert Dippier Domenico was on the boundary. There's a bloke called Matthew Campbell calling. And I think Paul Couch was there somewhere. Now, if all of them weren't autistic and dyslexic, the jury is still out on that, but they were certainly illiterate, and enunciation wasn't a thing that had actually taken prominence in any formal years of training at school, because I couldn't understand a word any of them said. And I thought, well, we could go to the top in this business. All we've got to do is actually be able to speak so that some people may understand us, let alone no one. Because
I was working at TNT. Sir Peter Abels was running TNT, this is some years ago. And a bloke who used to be the president of the South Melbourne Football Club and now heads up Australia Post, a guy called Graham John. He was the boss. He was trying to turn me into a super transport salesman. And he gave me a book, and I know you've probably heard me say this, but this is true. He gave me a book called In Search of Excellence. Now, In Search of Excellence is a corporate hand guide into what makes American companies famous and successful. And he gave it to me to take home and do a bit of light reading if I felt drowsy before nodding off one night. And I took it home, and I did feel drowsy, and opened it up, and one of the chapters in Search of Excellence was written by a guy by the name of Theodore Levitt, who's a business lecturer in studies at the Harvard University. And this is why I commentate on football, while you people actually help run the world and do something constructive with your lives. Because the first chapter in Search of Excellence was this. This is Theodore Levitt. Modelers build intricate decision trees whose pretension to utility is exceeded only by the awe in which the high-level line managers hold the technocrats who construct them. And I remember reading that and thinking, Jesus Christ. So I shut the book and I had a restless sleep, only read the paragraph. And that day I drove in and I went to see Graham and I gave him the book back and I resigned. And I then joined the media. And my first job in the media was sitting next to other rocket scientists, people who have quite conceivably helped launch a number of space shuttles. The first game I broadcast on the radio on our station over there, 3AW, was with Ron Barassi, a doyen, a past doyen of the game. And Ron's brain by that time, and this is 5 years ago, had imploded. It had actually tumbled in on itself and ceased to exist. And Ron's a dear friend of mine, but Ron now has the... Ron's in a different stratosphere to us. He speaks about things that I don't think have ever happened, let alone... And we are given the tag as special comments people now. Ron's comments are very, very special, let me tell you. And I figured I could go to the top in the media because I was at a dinner party with Ron about 5 months earlier. And about a quarter to midnight, someone tried to get into the back of Ron's brain, which is not a long trip, I'll give you the tip. And in a philosophical discussion on life as we know it, this was when it was all raging in the Middle East, someone said to him, what did he think of the Israeli-Arab position? And Ron said, well, he didn't mind it, but his wife put her back out. And I thought, yep, I could really go to the top here. This is what it's about, just being a little sharp in the bloke sitting next to you. And of course the bloke that I sit next to, if Ron's on my left-hand side, the bloke in the middle, because we flank him because he is the king, this is of radio, is a guy who earns, I think BRW said he earned $5 million last year, that's fishing and calling football. And that of course is Rex Hunt. Now I don't know if you've met Rex ever, but Rex is a shit salesman with a mouthful of samples. He speaks more shit in a day than you people would in a lifetime. And I sit next to him, I marvel at just how stupid someone can be and how successful you can be. This is a verbatim, and we're talking about reporting things faithfully, and I was speaking to Don. Don said he couldn't quite follow and wasn't quite into Rex's calling, and you know, you and about half the world. Rex is into diversity and being lateral and a bit obscure. And this is a verbatim transcript, because I was sitting next to him the first day I ever called football with Rex and Ron. Rex's opening comments of a game out at Waverley. And I got this off the logger tape back at the station the next day, because a logger tape, of course, is something you have to keep in case you transgress the rules of the Broadcasting Commission, and if you libel or slander someone, they can go and check on it. And I think you keep them for a fortnight or a month or something. And I got this off the logger tape because I couldn't believe it. This is Rex's opening comments. And it's all the more important that we point this out, that it's okay if you're vaguely familiar with the game, but if you've arrived from overseas and you're in the back of a cab, say, listening to the radio, and the cab driver's told you that the idea of our great Australian game is that a referee or an official or an umpire, as we call him, bounces the ball in the centre of the ground, and a couple of blokes jump up for it, and they try and get it down to some other personnel who eventually try and kick it between some big uprights, which are called a goal, or some smaller uprights, which are called a behind, or a point. That's the idea of our game, and they are from Baltimore, or Rhode Island, or wherever. And they're in the back of a cab, and they're listening to Rex, the opening call of a game out at Waverley. And this is it, verbatim, I promise you, I kid you not. And up, and you're from Baltimore. An umpire, Darren Goldspink, holds this air conveyance into the atmosphere and bang, slams it onto the rubber knob, and the ball rises into the afternoon sunshine, and Mill Hanna's cranium glistens in the afternoon light, and the ball goes down to Longmire on the lead to Lewy. Lewy gets the ball down the half-board line, and out comes Yablet. Now, if you are from Baltimore, there is a fair chance you won't have a clue as to what Rex is talking about. And there's a fair chance you'd also lean forward and you'd tap the cab driver on the shoulder and you'd say to the cab driver, you'd say to him if he could understand English, you'd ask him to turn the car around and drive you straight back to the airport. So these are some of the people that call football while you people are taking things out of context or helping run the world. And then of course there's another man that I, in another hat that I wear, I sit with, and he's probably been bigger than anyone in the game in Australia in his day, and that's Lou Richards. Now Lou is knackered now, he's completely lost track of life as any of us ever once knew it, and certainly Lou knows it now. The lights are on, no one even remotely near the top floor these days with Lou. Lou wrote, and this is why I reckon I can get to the top eventually, Lou wrote a book on the memoirs of his love life some years ago when Murfitt bought it and they made a kid's game out of it. And of course, unfortunately for his very lovely wife Edna, Lou just gets excited these days if he parks his car in a tight space. And then, in the same medium, I used to sit next to a man who we're playing a game almost in memory of here next week in Adelaide, Ted Whitten. Now, Teddy Whitten, very successful in the media. This is why, as I say, I think I can go to the top while you people help run the world. Ted had lost track of any power of reasoning and logical thought even before his illness had reared its unfortunate head. And I remember coming over to a, and this is how his mind was thinking. He was thinking in lateral terms to the extreme. Edward de Bono could have been his granduncle. I mean, he was just thinking in extremes. We were coming over here to a State of Origin game. Ted, as the chairman of selectors of Victoria, myself as a special commons man with 3OW, and we're sitting in the front of the plane. And Ted had become obsessed with sex and bodily parts and functions, so that if we're in a room here and someone broke wind audibly, you know, while everyone's trying to pretend it didn't happen, Ted would be going, beauty, fantastic. And, you know, he was just, class was not a long suit of Ted's. We're sitting up the front and the in-flight attendant came down and said to Ted, would you like headphones? He said, how did you know my name was Phones? And I remember sitting next to Ted thinking, Jesus, that's frightening, isn't it? Perfectly sensible question, quite a reasonable answer when you think about it, but not one that you'd think of on the spur of the moment. Mark Jackson was another man, a good friend of ours who works in the media. Well, we use the term loosely. Works in the media. His mind has completely travelled into a different stratosphere. Mark probably got it from Ted because they were good friends. Mark, I don't know if you've ever seen Mark close up. Have you ever seen Mark? Frighteningly ugly man. But just shows you that you don't have looks to be on the television. None of us profess to be anything in the looks department, but Mark, fair dinkum. With his teeth out, on a bright day, he could even put the fear of Christ into you. He would. He was doing some windmilling exercises on his father's property one pre-season, one late January afternoon, out in one of the paddocks. And the birds saw him and they thought he was a scarecrow. And they got that frightened, they bought corn back they'd pinched 8 years ago. And Mark had started to think in these diverse terms. He was the full forward for Geelong. Tom Hafey had... these are people that work in the media, incidentally, while you people are helping run the world. he was playing full forward for Geelong under Tom Hafey down there, and I got to know Mark pretty well because I was doing some specialist ruck coaching down there. And he was renovating a weatherboard house that the club had bought him as part of his contractual package. And after pre-season training one Thursday evening in February, we walked into a hardware store in the main street of Geelong, which is Moorabool Street. And Mark said to the guy behind the counter of the hardware store, he said, "I want some nails." Have you ever heard Mark talk? He said, "I want some nails." And the bloke said, "Yep." He said, "How long do you want them?" He said, "I want to keep them." Now, it's disconcerting, really, that, you know, you think that you're part of all this and you try and have a superiority complex, and it's not that hard at stages to just lift above Crackers Keenan. Crackers Keenan is a very, very avid media man in Melbourne. Now, do you know Crackers? Now, Crackers is adult. That's not one word. He's not an adult. He is two words. A-dult. Now, he is personally the only man I know that has to remove his pants to count to 21. He is not only an idiot, he is a congenital idiot. Now, he comes from Wilby, which is via Tungamar, which is up in the north of Victoria, where men are men and sheep are nervous. In fact, someone was telling me that the farmers up in Wilby these days are wearing kilts because the sheep have got used to the sound of zippers. Now, I don't know if that's altogether true, but it could well be true because not a lot of you would have seen Crackers in the altogether, but I saw him in the showers in the altogether once in a state game, or after a state game in 1979. We were in Canberra. And without being too risque, what a frighteningly large man. It was the only one I'd actually ever seen that had a knee in it. It was huge. Many of us believe to this day that it still has its own heart and lungs. And obviously, you know, in fact, I think it would be fair to say Crackers gave it a name. He named it, I think he called it Frank or Fred or George, because he said, "Why would you have 95% of your decisions being made by a stranger?" It looked like Kojak's head sticking out of a roll neck sweater. It was just an immense sort of piece of apparatus. So these are some of the people that I work with while you people are helping run the world. Now, we have been doing the footy show for 6 years, and unlike, I think, Father John, who runs a program here on 5AA, said that we were now being nice to people in South Australia because the ratings had slipped or something. Well, I did a check of that. The ratings, in fact, have gone up. This would be man in the media, Father John, probably misrepresenting the facts again or taking things out of context, like most people do. So that's not the case. We've 6 years we've been doing it, and I think possibly we take our lead and did from Jack Dyer, Lou Richards and Bob Davis, who set the trend, I suppose, with all that sort of revelry and merriment. We've taken a little further. We live a little more on the edge. We're not painstakingly obsessed with being politically correct. I could think that would be fair to say. And we take plenty of stick because the press sometimes are very biased about people who do things or innovate or create things. Like, you know, when I was run down outside my house, and I know this for a fact because I had someone saw this happen, a neighbour of mine, it was said that I'd been having a party and there was a lot of drinking going on, and I was actually drunk, and that's why I walked under the car. And a photographer came out from one of the papers there. There's only two, so you can pick which one you think it was. And there was a crushed Victoria Bitter beer can outside someone's house, four doors up in the gutter. And they kicked it down the gutter and actually placed it in front of my house and took a shot of my house with the can in front of the house. So it just gave credence to the fact that there could have been a party going on inside, and sort of manipulated into being the fact that there was a huge party going on inside, and there was the evidence. Someone had, in a moment of stupidity, thrown a can over the fence. But of course they ignore all the major things in life, of course, like and this is not a political comment, although you think it is because it doesn't matter, but it's just the stupidity of the fact that a man with 13 children and drives a Fiat Bambino can actually tell us how much tax we pay. Have you ever thought of how stupid that is? But no, we don't seem to take much interest in that sort of thing. Just worried about if we can get a can outside my house. Or Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton has oral sex with a piece of slag in America, and then they criticise him for lying. I mean, you wouldn't own up to it, would you? I mean, if someone said, did Monica Lewinsky give you a head job? You'd say, oh, turn it up, don't be bloody stupid. Unless you were absolutely sure someone knew, you'd deny it, wouldn't you? But no, that went on for 2 years, all that sort of stuff. And yet we have institutions that are meant to be credible. And this is not a religious thing either, but I mean, the three most overrated things in the world are the Weather Bureau, wine tasters, and the Catholic Church. And I might be a Catholic. But, you know, like fair dinkum. We don't seem to worry too much about any of those things, particularly the last. And they transgress just about every particular moral and ethical rule in life. But no, we don't worry about all the big things, just the little things. And then you paint your face black. And the press hijack that. That gets transported into being racist and vilifying someone. And that is the most disgraceful piece of crap I've ever heard since I've been on this planet. Legitimate satire can be transported into the fact that we had to go to a reconciliation meeting with the League, set up. An absolute charade it was, an absolute charade. And the man who it was suggested we had done wrong by had never even seen it. Up until the day we sat there, still hadn't seen it, and to this day I don't believe he'd seen it. Might have been told about what had happened. But this is not a criticism of him, this is a criticism of the people that manipulate him, and of course the people who report it, because, and I'll just ask you this now, and you might have a legit, I have yet, to have anyone tell me what is racist, or what is vilifying, about painting your face black and pretending you are someone who didn't turn up to your footy show. And he didn't have to turn up, incidentally, that's not the point. If anyone can tell me what's racist about that, tell me. I've yet to find anyone. The whole thing got transported and hijacked into a complete... We were nominated in Parliament. I was in the Senate by someone who said it was a disgrace and was the government going to take some action about my racism. And Spider Everett did the wrong thing. Did completely the wrong thing. We said so. If anyone can tell me what's racist about painting your face black and pretending you are someone who is black in the name of satire, or trying to point out that he didn't turn up and pretending that he was out the back and saying, well, this is as close as we can get. Here I am, ask me some questions. I'm Nicky Winmar. If you can tell me what's racist about that, please tell me, because I've yet to have had that explained to me by anyone. But no, we just sort of say, well, it is racist, and let's go on and talk about how racist we all are, or I am. So it is frightening. Anyhow, the footy show. I'll just finish on this, the footy show. And, of course, the legacy of all this is that you get ostracised in certain sections. Not that I could really give a stuff, but I went for membership of a golf club. I drove a Ford. Ford said, oh, no, we can't have you that because you're a racist. Well, you know, so they stopped me from driving their cars. Jeez, what a hardship that is. I went to be a member of a golf club. And they said, no, your attitude's bad about all that sort of thing. Even though the man I know for a fact who stopped me joining takes cocaine, I know that for a fact, and has screws around. I know that for a fact, and is married. Now, would I bring that up? And have him ostracised from his own club? No. It is amazing. But still, we push on. Because we all get things out of context. The big things we ignore, the little things we really dive in on because we think that's good. Live and Kicking, our competitor. Terrific people on the show. No reflection on them at all. My peers, my colleagues, if you like, who have been at our station. We paint our face black. 2 weeks that went on for, they rig competitions, blatantly and dishonestly rig competitions. And I think I might have read a couple of paragraphs. If that was been us, we would have been driven out of business. We would have been legally challenged, sued. Hardly anything is said about that because we have our favourites. We like to tear down the people who push it a bit. And do you think we care? Well, we don't care. We just marvel at how inconsistent most of you people are. The footy show. 6 years, we found 3 things out about the footy show. That the ratings are still very good in South Australia. The majority of people who watch the show are women. The majority of women who watch the show know nothing about the game. That's what they tell us. And the most popular thing we do is street talk. And street talk is where we go out and we try and find any silly bastard that's out there. That's what everyone thinks we do. But have you ever walked out in the community of late? Have you ever been to the races or the dogs or been to a Moomba celebration or to a grand final or to a cricket match and just seen what tree swingers actually most of society is made up from? Neanderthals, people who actually be hard-pressed to have an IQ higher than their shoe size. So we go out and we're going to do it after this. And we get accused of being picking on the incontinent, the infirm, the psychiatrically impaired, the inane, the imbecilic. And sure, we're into the entertainment industry, and after 2 hours we'll get 4 minutes of tape out of it, and we will put the clowns on. But unless you're out there speaking to the clowns, you don't understand it. Most of them love it. In fact, we have never, ever met anyone who has been on street talk that hasn't loved being on street talk, because what you don't understand is that they give us plenty first and then we put the camera on them and they love it. Makes them a hero in their own little neighbourhood. They become famous for 15 minutes. And then it was said we used to slag disabled people. That was one. That was one thing criticism levelled at us. We've never, ever slagged or criticised disabled people in wheelchairs that we come up to. We speak to them, and we speak to them like they're normal people, and we have a bit of fun with them, but we never refer to their disability. We refer to them as people. But is that reverse discrimination? You couldn't win. If we didn't treat them like we would treat normal people, we would be criticised. If we do, we're criticised. So what we do is we decide what we do, and we let you people worry about if you think it's right or wrong. The moral arbiters of society. The minority. And that's how we live our lives. Anyhow, it's very nice to be here. And you will give me a fair pacing for this. But would you like me to come here and blow wind up your backside, or would you like me to say it as I see it? Very manipulative and devious people. The majority of the press. That's over 50%, so there's 49% who are probably very decent people. But we get plenty. We've been sued, we give it out, we cop it, we've been sued. There's a bloke who's not here that sued us because I said he was fat and he sweated, and never trust people who sweat and are fat when they interview you, because he misrepresented an interview we had so much so that you couldn't recognise it. And I have a witness for that, because a bloke who sat next to me. So we said he was fat, and we said he was so fat, in fact, that the first time he had a bonk, he burnt his ass on the lights. And he sued us. Because his forum was his paper, and my forum is the television. So we don't care. Anyhow, if you've got any questions, it's been very nice to be here, and I hope you all have a very nice day. And that things get better in your life if they're not as good as they should be. So thank you very much for listening.
You feel better now, Sam?
I felt good before I started.
Don't go away. Questions now, please. Thank you very much indeed, Sam.
Hang on.
Media first, John, media first. They'll run out soon, but you'll be all right.
I knew there was a question that I...
sorry, would the media give their names and the organisation
they represent first? You heard Judith, Robert Main from the Bulletin magazine. I knew there was a question that I meant to ask Jeff Kennett when he was standing where you were standing, Sam, 18 months ago. Now, fair dinkum, I know you're a Victorian, but what's better, footy or sex?
Well, just judging by the look of you, sir, I could understand you having trouble deciding. But would you like to take Claudia Schiffer home and put her on some plastic sheets and oil her up? Or would you like to take a Sharon football home, rip the bladder out and see how you went with that? And I'm not sure how you'd answer. Brad?
Brad Crouch from the Sunday Mail. Sam, we've seen some big changes in the game of football over recent years. Could you gaze into the crystal ball and tell us what we might be seeing over the next decade or so as far as things like earpieces, changes to the rules, protective clothing, things of that nature?
Well, I think we'll have a couple of stations doing the football, whether it be Channel 10 or Channel 9 or Channel 2 or SBS or anyone else who's in the business, or Channel 9 even. Because I think there's such an importance and we are so obsessed with football that I think it's getting too big for the one network. I think that someone will eventually say that the only thing ruining the game slowly is the umpiring, and the people that run it will have to come to grips with the fact that they'll have to employ people at the end of the day who have some feel for the game and not just umpire from the book, because that will enrage the fans and the punters more than anything. We'll end up playing in just a handful of arenas around the country, probably on synthetic turf, probably close over a couple of the stadiums, and probably only a dozen or so sides, or a dozen sides, will be playing in a national competition. And therefore the standard will be enhanced greatly, because we'll eliminate four sides who play pretty ordinary football from any one week to another. And you'll probably have to pay to watch most of the television on the actual television. So they would be some of the things. I don't think we'll ever, well, I hope we never try and break into England or Ireland or Scotland or Wales or America. I think we have an indigenous game that is unique to this country. And why we want to do anything else with it, I'm not quite sure. But it would be foolhardy to waste resources and money trying to do that. So... But we have a fantastic game, and because of its aggressive, it's not as aggressive or brutal as rugby, but it is more skillful, it is not as perhaps powerful and awe-inspiring as American gridiron, but you need to be far more aerobically inclined. It has just about the lot going for it, our game, and given some reasonable standard games by eliminating some of the sides, nothing will ever get near it in this country, and neither it should. Because it's fantastic, and I don't think we'll end up protecting ourselves out of recognition. That's one of the unique features of our game. I mean, we spoke about for 2 years whether you could wear gloves or not to catch the ball with. So I don't think you'll see too much over-protection as far as that goes. And hopefully the trial by video system and the people who surveil our great game will take a step back and realise that in a pretty frenetic game, when tempers... and the thrust and parry of a very physical game sometimes oversteps the mark, we don't rush in and find people out of existence and take them up to the tribunal 8 days a week for things that really are just minor misdemeanours. Trial by video is set up to catch the king hitters and the cowards, not for much else, but now it's become the norm rather than the exception.
Rex Jory?
Sam, Rex Jory, the advertiser. I gave you a shocking pasting in print about what you said about what you did to Winmar. So,
I don't mind that, but well, maybe you can ask your question, but maybe I can ask you one for a start. You could tell me.
No, they're here to hear you, not me.
Pardon?
They're here to hear you, not me.
No. Well, fair enough.
Does
that mean you can't think of anything?
Not at all. No. I've said it all in what I wrote, so I'm...
You'll have to pardon me, but...
No, I'll send it to you.
Okay. Well, then we can reconvene this and I'll... when I've read it, I'll say if I think it was fair or not.
Just basically, quickly, what was racist about painting my face black? Just quickly, what was the basis of your article?
Oh, in one sense, I found it offensive. I thought that you were having a go at a guy that...
I was.
Who was not there to defend himself.
I was.
Okay.
That's what you do with anyone that on a football show. If you wait for everyone to turn up that you have a go at, you'd have a studio audience of 50,000, mate. But Nicky Winmar wasn't annoyed about me painting his face black. I know that. He was annoyed because we made a bit of a gig out of him. But we do that with everyone, and people do it to us. But go ahead.
Who's the best player you've ever seen? Who's the best journalist you've ever worked with?
The best player I've ever seen is easy. That's Graham Farmer from Perth. I played with him and against him. And he had the two basic elements of what sport's about. He had the mental side of it under control, and he had the physical side. He overcame extreme adversity to be a star. He changed the game, genuinely changed the game. No other person that I know of has changed the game like Farmer. He started offensive handball back in the 60s when Ron Barassi polished it off, if you like, in 1970. He was a master tactician. He was uncompromising. He was fearless, he was intimidatory, and he was snide. But he wasn't a coward. But he never let anyone compromise him or get the better of him. If you did, you know you were going to get it back, but you never knew when, and you never know where it was going to come from. So these are the elements of competitive sport. Never let anyone take a rise out of you without letting them know that you're there. And his skills and palming and kicking and hand passing of the ball were legendary. The best journalist I've worked with, did you say? The best journalist. In football. Well, I don't mind. Journalists who write about football, it's fantastic, and I don't subscribe to the theory that you have to have played the game to know anything about it, because we speak about a lot of things we don't know nothing about. But I do take exception to, unless you've actually played the game at a reasonably high level, you don't understand just how hard it is and how brutal the game is and how many injuries you get. And I know everyone, when you step onto the ground, think you're 100% fit, but hardly any players ever play when they're more than 90% fit. And people who don't and have not played the game just don't take things into consideration when they criticise people whose vocations and lifestyles are in the balance and at risk. And we criticise plenty of people, so don't think I'm dissociating myself. But basically, you are not accountable for careers and lives you ruin by ignorance. Pardon? The best journalist? Well, no, I have high regard for plenty of journalists because they write well and you can understand them and they bring the gravity of the situation, whether it be in golf or tennis or... But, you know, Michael Sheehan is a friend of mine. I like the way he writes. He's fearless, will say what he thinks, but I don't believe oversteps the boundary of being... not credible. Plenty of people are not credible. Plenty of people actually want to be Andy Warhols. They just want to... I think Charles Macaulay said this. You might have heard of Charles Macaulay, or I think it was actually Thomas Macaulay. He said that he was a coxcomb and a bore, weak, vain, pushing, curious, garrulous, was obvious to all who were acquainted with him. That he could not reason and had no wit, no humour or no eloquence was obvious from his writing. Nature had made him a slave and an idolater. His mind resembled one of those creepers which the botanists call parasites and which subsist only by clinging round the stems and imbibing the juices of stronger plants. That's what most journalists do and are. They suck off people who contribute something, and they contribute very little themselves.
Darren Hinch?
Used to be in radio. Darren Hinch, unemployed. Sam, you are You have an awesome reputation. You're a notorious ladies' man. You're known for your horizontal folk dancing. I would just like to know, have you ever white-handed anybody, or, as I say in South Australia, cut somebody else's lunch?
Jesus, I hope so. Plenty of people deserve it. No, a ladies' man, that's another, I mean, what a misnomer. A lady, what's a ladies' man mean? You're interested in women, that's what I said. I mean, what's wrong with being interested in women? I would far prefer the company of women to men, but all depends what sort of circumstance we're talking about. But I might have been a little reckless in the past, but I can tell you, as of a couple of years ago, I'm very, very careful now to make sure if anyone is attached, and there might be any threat or any thought of people getting upset about who I go out with or what I do. And I suppose age, not AIDS, age brings this on you. I've actually can't be bothered too much anymore now. I lead a far quieter life, says this man here chuckling, who as fast as they can pull him under him. But I've still interested in women, and let's hope most of us in the room are. Mind you, if you're not, it doesn't matter, because, as I say, it seems to be the thing to be now. I seem to have missed out. I actually not bisexual, and I'm not into drugs, so I think I'm missing out in a fair chunk of life. But I reckon we might, Don, if it's all right with you, mate, might get into drugs this year. What do you reckon? Must be something, isn't it? Everyone's birds have flown out your ass.
I think we'll try another question.
Paul Sterak from the Advertiser, Sam. I don't know how I follow that up.
Oh, well. Well, don't.
You mentioned the things you dislike most is uninformed criticism.
Yeah.
Would one of the worst insults for you be that you could dish it up but can't take it?
Oh.
And why is that not the case with you?
I reckon that is... Now, if we're being objective, I reckon that is really unfair for you to say that. I mean, not that I mind you being unfair, but... if you don't think I can take it, I reckon I would, and this sounds like I'm sort of proud of this, but I'm not, I reckon I would cop more as a public personality than anyone in Australia. I reckon anyone. Yeah, but that is politically motivated, mostly. People who are on the other side of his political fence criticise him, and people on his, you only have to hear talkback radio. When there's an issue of religion or politics comes up, all the liberal sympathisers ring in and say he's doing a great job. All the Labor people ring in and say he's... And it swings around no matter who's in government or power. But I reckon I cop more adverse criticism than any person in Australia. And are you saying that I give it out but can't take it? Oh, well, I give it out. I give it out plenty. I give it out. Of course I do. As I say, but I reckon the ledger is well and truly weighted on the people that give it.
Thank you, John Mangan. Sam, I'm not in the media.
It doesn't matter if you are, sir.
And also, I have a polite question. Number one, I enjoyed what you said very much. Number two, I think your sense of humour is outstanding. Number three, and the question is, what is your ambition, seeing you've achieved so much?
Well, that is a fair question. I've never been into the old handbooks of goal setting. I've never planned a day in my life, because if you work for someone, if you don't own the business, it's like the man that owned Remington or Schick or who was he? I liked the company so much I bought it. Unless you actually own the business you work in, it's not much use planning, because at any stage you can be sacked or downsized or made redundant for whatever reason. You might be successful in what you do, but the person who runs the business might have a set against you for something. So they can terminate you, and we are in the best business for terminating for no reason at all. So I've never planned a day in my life, and at 53 I don't plan to start planning now. So I don't know where all this will end. We might end tomorrow on the footy show, and then we'll push on doing something else. But the footy show has legitimately and genuinely and directly brought football to a lot more people than you people give us credit for. We have opened up a whole new audience for football, and that is a fact. And it is now not just a parochial men's game dominated by in-talk and esoteric talk about football. We have brought it to a far wider-ranging audience of youth and certainly females. And we get very little cooperation from the people who run the game because they're both in bed with one another, and that's fair enough. That's how it should be. The AFL and Channel 7 are right in there together, and you pay plenty of money for the rights. We would expect that too, but we fight against the odds. We're not worried about it. In fact, we half the time think that if we didn't have anyone to do with football on the show but just spoke about it, we'd probably be better off, because you don't have to suck and kowtow to people and to get them on the show. So we don't worry about it anymore. We say, if you want to come on, come on, be fantastic, and if you don't, well, that's fair enough too. Like we did to Nicky Winmar. We asked him to come on, and he said he'd come on. And then he didn't come on, so we took the urine out of him. We didn't racially abuse him, and we didn't vilify him. Yes.
Oh, good afternoon, Sam.
Hello, sir.
My wife and I have enjoyed your comments this afternoon. My name's Graham Lloyd. Just a comment and your opinion in relation to the AFL relocating a team from Melbourne to Hobart and one to Darwin.
Well, I think this has been an ongoing point of discussion. I don't think that will ever happen, either of those two things. Tasmania, it's not viable. They've gone into that plenty of times, and it's been a great feeding ground, Tasmanian football, for national football and certainly Victorian football. But I don't think they have the infrastructure, and I don't think they have the wherewithal and the sponsors and the amount of finance available to make the thing work. And as for Darwin, well, I mean, we all whinge about going up and playing Brisbane in the daytime up there, and even at night when it's hot. I don't know how they'd go if we went up to Darwin and played. So I think for the same reason, not climatic, but for the same reason as it wouldn't work in Tasmania, it wouldn't work in Darwin because of the infrastructure and the finance needed to set a thing like that up. That's just in my opinion. But then again, who am I?
Stan James?
Sam. Stan James from the Adelaide Advertiser.
Yes.
Never been a football... Never been a football writer, but I've enjoyed football over the... Coming and going? It's just, I think you've probably shown how the whole world of the media has changed, because all those people that you've talked about today with whom you worked, and I've been in newspapers for a long while. I met you up in the Barossa Valley in 1969 when the carnival was here. But I came up through the old journo school, as I say, and there were a couple of very, very good writers of football. And I just, I can remember, we had one here in Adelaide called Laurie Jervis, who never played football, but he said, "You don't have to be a jock to pick a bad egg." You know, you knew that. And the other one I always admired was Alf Brown from the Herald in Melbourne. Do you think that the standard of journalism... Has. Here we go again. Do you think that, well, obviously times have moved on. I always admired their interpretive ability in print to be able to present footy. That seems to be not quite as strong, and I think that others, such as footballers, are making more comments about the game, which probably is justified. But there has been a significant change in reporting. Would you agree?
I would indeed, and Percy Beams was another one. But you see, with so many papers and so many football journals and so many people trying to be Andy Warhols, that people become extravagant, and they don't tell blatant and direct lies, they tell half-untruths, and they take things out of context, and then the person who that is said about then has to justify or redeem their reputation by saying, no, that is not right, and then that becomes the story in itself, and they create the whole thing themselves. They are on a roller coaster perpetuating their own immortality, most of them, and they do not have the nous, and they don't have the intellectual capabilities to do it,
and they are there for mainly one reason, that is to make themselves famous. And, and they do it a la... I wasn't pointing at you. I'm telling you, I wasn't pointing at you. But it's like, they, you know, they cling around the stems and imbibe the juices of stronger plants, those stronger plants who are the people who actually make it happen, and they sit there behind word processors and have 2 or 3 days, not live television, not live radio, have 2 or 3 days to think up some smart-ass thing to say that is probably wrong and probably without foundation and certainly lacks credibility.
Well, I don't quite agree with that.
Well, I'd hate to think you'd agree with most of what I say.
All done?
Well, anyhow, thank you very much indeed. It's been very nice to be here.
Thank you very much, Sam Newman. Now, this beast has been worn round the vine and twisted and done all sorts of wonderful things, and it is a proud South Australian institution. I hope you enjoy it.
Oh, that's beautiful. I know that wine well. And that is a beautiful bottle of wine. Thank you very much.
Now, before you all start talking, let's draw the raffle. Kimmy Dillon, come up here and help me draw the raffle. Okay, get your tickets out. Okay, the President just asked me if I could mention that today you've been drinking the 1997 Gramps Barossa Semillon, and I hope you enjoyed it, and also the Grenache from Gramps. Okay, the first prize, Kim Dillon from Channel 9, for this lovely leather chair from Le Cornu, the leather chair and matching footstool from Le Cornu and Chairworks. Kim, there you go.
Yellow ticket, C13.
Who's lucky? Who's got C13? No, hang on, somebody's got it in the room. Here they go. Who's got it? Yellow ticket? We got it? Yellow C13, quick. Oh, lucky man. Lady. Who is that? Do we know? The person sitting down there, who was it? Oh, Marge. Marge, whoever Marge is. Okay. That's all hers. Thank you to Le Cornu. And now for a 12-month connection to Telstra Message Bank at Home, valued at $60, plus a Telstra gold pen and pencil set. Who do we have?
A yellow ticket again,
C25. C25, yellow. Do we... Oh, the gentleman over here again. My goodness. My goodness. There it is. My goodness. I don't believe that. You are so lucky today. You're touched. For 3 bottles of wine, Kim.
Okay, 3 bottles of wine, a white ticket, G64, John Dreyer.
For another 3 bottles of wine.
A yellow ticket or orange ticket. Orange C38, Kevin Hammond.
Oh, there we go. Over here.
How many more?
And one more, Kim. A carton of Hahn Premium Light from SA Brewing.
Well, it's sort of an orangey colour. H88, Brad Crouch.
Brad Crouch, Sunday Mail.
Sunday Mail.
Where's Brad? Here's Brad from Sunday Mail. Brad, a carton of Hahn Light for you, just down here. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Kim. Finally, could I just have your attention for one last moment? Just to remind you that on the tables we have next month's luncheon, or for July 30th, Friday, July 30th, Janet Holmes a Court. This will be a fantastic lunch. We've been trying for 12 months to get Janet Holmes a Court, and we have her, and that's terrific. So that's Friday, July 30th, 12 noon at the Hindley Park Royal. Thank you for your attendance today. Thank you.